This Committee on Revenue and School Finance, June 5th, 1987, 8 a.m., Hearing Room A. Work session on Senate Bill 98A, 579A, 674A, 275A, 100A, and House Bill 2664. Tape 10201, Side A.
I did. I said no loud noises this morning. We have a number of bills on our work schedule. I think that the first one will take is Senate Bill 100, so we can get reconnect behind us. And income tax, I think Rick has a sheet in behind the Senate Bill 100 in your books where it says Senate Bill 100 amendments. Rick, why don't we just go through one by one and you can tell us where we are and which amendments we need to adopt in order to make a policy judgment.
Okay, the starting, in your books following the memo that says Senate Bill 100 amendments are amendments in numerical order, and then I have them listed on this, these two pages here, a brief description of each, and we might as well just they're all just odds and ends. Some of these came to the attention of the Subcommittee on Income Tax, and some were looked at as possible candidates for being included in 2225, and this is what's left over. These and some of these other issues are left over from that. The first one is alimony payments by non-residents. Currently, if you're a non-resident and you're filling out your form, there's no deductibility of your alimony payments. There was a couple of fellows that came in and testified that they were non-residents but had Oregon income, were paying Oregon taxes, and they were also paying alimony to Oregon residents, and they felt there was a double taxation issue there. This amendment was drawn to allow non-residents to deduct an apportioned share of their alimony payments that are made to an Oregon resident. So they only get to deduct those alimony payments that are made to an Oregon resident, and only to the extent that only in that proportion that their Oregon income is to their total income. So their alimony payments are considered to be or paid out of their only a portion of their Oregon income. And it also has a section in there requiring the taxpayer to provide the taxpayer identification number of the person receiving the alimony so that the department can try to keep track of this. So that's the Dash 8 amendment.
Okay, why don't we do these one at a time? Is there a discussion on Dash 8? Or questions?
Sure, I'd move the 8.
Representative Hugo moves the Dash 8 amendments.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, there's one more issue here.
Okay, Rick?
Yeah, when Gary Humphrey, Department of Revenue, and I were going over these things for technical mistakes, he said, don't forget that they had asked for retroactivity on this.
Yeah.
And I didn't have this drafted up with retroactivity in it. But that is another issue. That was
who had asked for retroactivity?
The people that were affected by this that had paid taxes over the last few years. The one fellow asked for retroactivity back to 1977-78 when the feds changed over and made alimony an adjustment rather than itemized deduction. The other one, I think, was only interested in over the last couple of years when he had moved to Washington.
Well, we're going to find out if the committee's in a generous mood this morning. The way the amendments are drafted, it says that the change applies to the tax year beginning on January 1st, 1987. Is there any sentiment for moving that date backwards?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Hugo?
Rick, correct me if I'm wrong, but there was a recent court case that dealt with this issue in the court. In its opinion, said that in effect that we have probably made a mistake here in the current law, and that was a fairly recent opinion. and that's what prompted them to come in. Is that correct?
The one of the fellows that came to testify had just lost his appeal to the tax court earlier this year, at the beginning of this year. And the tax court did make a comment that it appeared to be somewhat unfair and suggested a legislative solution because the law was clear. The law was clear on what it said, and the fellow was denied any relief, but made some suggestion that a legislative solution would be
Mr. Chair,
appropriate.
My point is that the reason we have the bill and the reason we have the amendments is because of that tax court decision, which is a recent decision. If the law had been onerous since 1977 or whenever, it seems to me that parties who were affected by it, or adversely affected, could have gone to the court long before they did. And I'm not terribly interested in being retroactive because I think we should simply adopt the -8 amendments consistent with the court's opinion of 1985, I believe it was. Was it an 85 decision or 86 decision?
The decision was in the first part of 87.
Okay.
It was right. I'm looking for that.
So I'm not interested in making it retroactive.
February 13th, 87 was when the decision was made. Yeah, this is the language that was in this. Hope the legislature would remedy the situation.
Oh, okay. So Representative Hugo expresses a lack of interest in making it retroactive. Any other discussion? Is there any objection to the -8 amendments?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Gloria objects. Janine, whenever you're ready, call the
Mr. Chairman,
Representative McCarty?
I just wanted to ask Representative Flory, you're just opposed to giving them anything, or? Yeah, okay, I understand.
Okay, Janine, call the roll on the -8 amendments to Senate Bill 100.
Representative Flory?
No.
Hamlin?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
McCarty?
Aye.
Trahert?
Aye.
Spoon?
Aye.
Hostetter?
Aye. Motion's adopted. Now what will happen? Will we see divorced men running over to Clark County, or is it the other way around?
That are already in Clark County will smile.
Oh, okay.
When they fill out their taxes next week.
Okay, then we go to -9.
Good interstate issue.
Yes.
-9 deals with Oregon residents who are in the military for example, get discharged partway through the year and return to the state. It allows them to deduct the active duty pay they received during the time they were outside the state. And currently, the situation is that if an Oregon resident that's in the military that's stationed outside the state for the entire year and doesn't maintain a home here in the state, doesn't spend more than 31 days here in the state, is treated as a non-resident. They do not pay taxes on the military pay they make outside the state. And what happens is when they get discharged and come back to the state, then they're treated as an Oregon resident for the entire year and pay taxes on their full income for the entire year. So if they came back halfway through the year in June, they would pay taxes on their entire income. Under this bill, if they come back in June, they pay taxes only on the income that's earned in the second half of the year. The military income earned in the first half of the year is not such a tax.
Representative McCarty?
Well, I think this is a great amendment, but I was just thinking about, you know, we still have that $3,000 deduction, a subtraction. Now, maybe the way this is written, it will be plus the $3,000 subtraction. Am I reading?
Rick points out that the $3,000 issue is dealt with in -7, but how does it interact with?
Well, if you do not qualify for the exemption being created in the -9 amendment, second issue, then you would be eligible for the $3,000. So, for example, if you're on reserve duty and you go to California for a couple of weeks, okay, you're not going to be eligible for the -9 amendment exclusion. but you're still going to be eligible for the $3,000.
Okay, yeah, that's fine.
And maybe I should point out that in the dash 9 amendment here, that we specifically excluded pension or retirement pay or pay for service when on military reserve duty. So anyway, reserve people that go out of the state will not be eligible for this exclusion. Okay, let's talk about the exclusion when we get there. Representative Calori?
Well, I was going to ask now, this is regardless of whether or not they are paying taxes in any other state. Is that right?
That's right. They're likely not to be paying taxes in any other state.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, I guess I'm the negative one for the day. I can't see it. I don't understand why they shouldn't pay taxes somewhere. It's another subsidy for federal employees. You know, we don't think anything of having people get married the day before the end of a year and giving them a full year treatment. We don't think of anything of people moving into the state on the last day. We don't think of all kinds of changes that people make at the last minute have federal employees move here either. And the only reason I bring that up is because that was the way this was expressed in the first place, how terrible it was to have people move in the last day of the year and get charged for the whole year. It works fine if it works to their advantage, but if it doesn't, I'd like to have somebody explain to me why we should have a class of people who don't have to pay taxes to anybody, whether it's Oregon or not, and I'm just against it. Sorry.
Hey, Representative Jones, do you want to respond or say something else?
Well, I just want to clarify if I can. This only applies if they retire, does not, or for some reason are no longer in active duty. Is that correct, Rick?
If they
are discharged or terminate for some reason, for whatever reason, they terminate their military duty. Is that correct?
For discharge or termination of full-time active duty.
Okay, so those people who have been in the service elsewhere but simply moved back into the state who are still in active duty are not impacted by this. They have the $3,000 exemption.
That's right.
Okay.
And if they're back here and they're stationed and working here, and they'll be treated as an Oregon resident subject to tax.
With the $3,000 exemption.
Yeah, and they'll have that $3,000.
Let me respond also to Representative Calori. People who live in another state and move back the last year are paying taxes somewhere, and I guess that's your point, isn't it? Or if they move in from Washington and their income was earned in Washington, we don't charge them on income earned in Washington even if they move back the last day of the year. The fact that they didn't pay income tax doesn't change it. They would only be charged on the income earned in Oregon.
I guess the essence of the Dash 9 then would treat military pay for a person who is stationed outside of Oregon that's almost like any other income earned outside of Oregon for that person. Representative Calori?
Well, you got a point there, except these are Oregon residents. They have declared themselves as Oregon residents, which is a little different than someone who was a resident of another state, such as Washington, that comes in. These are people who probably for some other convenient reasons declared themselves or at least are classified as Oregon residents.
Well, I don't want to get into a big philosophical discussion, but if I could just, the point is, I think if they earn income outside of the state from any other source, we don't tax it.
Rick suggests a friendly amendment that if their car is registered in Oregon, that they be treated as Oregon residents.
Yeah.
Regardless of where they're stationed. We'll keep 2112 alive here for a little bit longer. Okay, anybody want to move the Dash 9? Do we have a motion?
I guess Representative McCarty moved the Dash 9 amendments,
saying such wonderful things about it.
Representative Traher?
Well, Representative McCarty already moved.
Okay.
I will move the Dash 9 amendment.
Okay.
As written.
Representative McCarty moves Dash 9.
Do you object?
I do.
Okay.
But it only seems right because now that once they are retired, they're going to be given favorable treatment for the rest of their life as a retired federal employee, too, because we took care of that earlier, so we might as well give them a little gift at the beginning, too, with the hint.
Do not have a good time.
Okay.
You know well, evidently.
Janine, would you call the roll on the Dash 9 amendments?
Hamlin?
Aye.
Hugo?
Aye.
Jones?
Aye.
McCarty?
Aye.
Trahern?
Aye.
Valori?
No.
Schoon?
Aye.
Hostica?
Aye. Motion's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, do I have to declare a conflict of interest at this time?
No, unless you were in the active duty military in the
you
last
moved
calendar
in.
Year and you moved into the state of Oregon, then we'll investigate some other things.
Well, as you know, I'm in the U.S. Army Reserve.
Okay, Dash 10. Rick?
Okay, this next amendment deals with a situation where an individual is part of an S corporation, and the S corporation profits are being passed through to the individual and being taxed on the individual's tax return here in Oregon. It's personal income tax. Some states don't recognize S corporations, and so the income that corporation earned in another state is taxed as a regular corporation. This amendment allows those taxes paid in those other states as an S corporation as that credit against Oregon's personal income tax. This is the one that Mr. Gaffney brought, and the reason this is become more evident now is that at the end of last year, many corporations switched back to S corporation status because of the change in federal law, and then all of a sudden it popped up that some states weren't recognizing S corporations, and so it had some implication for the credit on the personal tax. And what this does is it says, for Oregon purposes, we'll just pretend that when they pay taxes in California, they're really paying personal taxes, personal income taxes, and they get to use those as a credit against their Oregon tax.
Okay.
I have to understand this.
Yeah. Just sure. Representative McCarty?
Yeah, he's going to make the motion.
Okay, Representative Hugo?
Well, I was going to explain. This is an important issue. Very important issue for very few number of Oregonians, but it is important. For example, a business operating in Portland or in Oregon has a subchapter S, which expands into California. Would get nailed pretty hard if we don't pass this.
Well, they would get taxed on their income in California and then turn around and get taxed again on the same income in Oregon if we didn't do this.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
It seems to be okay if the feds in Oregon do it, but it doesn't seem quite fair when we let the states do it to each other.
You got to draw the line somewhere. I'd move Dash 10.
Representative Hugo moves the Dash 10 amendment. Further discussion? Is there any objection?
Go ahead, Ted.
It's like the Illinois issue.
Yeah, Ted, come on.
Stop now.
Ted objects to giving to people, but not to corporations. Okay.
Oh, boy.
Dash 10 is adopted. And you can, I was trying to drown it out while I was there. But in deference to the committee, we're not hitting the gavel very hard this morning.
The fourth issue has to do with payments of interest on refunds.
I see. We'll
tax deficiency payments to the Department of Revenue. The situation here is that a taxpayer may receive a notice of deficiency from the Department of Revenue that they owe some tax. Taxpayer goes ahead and pays the tax right away in order to avoid having to pay interest if they're late in making the payment. So they pay up right away, and then later it's discovered that the taxpayer was correct and the department was wrong and they didn't really need to pay that tax, so the department refunds the tax. Now the question is, when should the department start paying interest on the money that it received from the taxpayer. The current interpretation is the department starts paying interest on that money 4 months after the time that it received it. Okay, so the department gets it for free for the first 4 months. What this amendment would do is, in the case when a deficiency is paid, that the department will pay interest from the day that it receives the money when it makes a refund. There's a second issue here, and the question is whether this should apply retroactively. So there are two amendments, the Dash 11 amendments and the Dash 12 amendments. Dash 11 amendments has a section that has this apply retroactively. And the Dash 12, it does not apply retroactively. This, again, is a case that was brought to our attention from a taxpayer who is currently in tax court right now on this issue. The taxpayer is in tax court on this issue claiming the department is not interpreting their statute correctly and that the statute currently does allow for interest payments from the date of the payment of the deficiency. That's the taxpayer's contention. They're in tax court on that issue. This language here would just make it very clear that that's the policy.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
Of course, the retroactivity in this.
If you look in the Dash 11 amendments, you start on line 18 and page 1. And you can see down there that it says that on line 21 there that says for tax years ending on or after December 31st, 1983.
That's what I was looking for, was a date.
Yeah. And this carries it back to cover the case of the individual that brought this issue up.
Mr. Fields? Or?
Yeah, it was Mr. Ray Fields. No. And he's not here this morning. He's been here for last couple of days waiting for this. He did testify the other day when you had the hearing.
How many other people would be impacted if we went retroactive?
I asked the department to check into it, and I guess I'm seeing Gary shaking his head that it's not possible to figure it out. You have to remember what the situation here is that it's the department issues a notice of deficiency that the taxpayer owes, had done something wrong in their tax return and actually owed more tax. The taxpayer pays, and then later the department makes a refund to the taxpayer that they made a mistake. So if the department hasn't made very many mistakes, then there won't be very many people, and they're confident that they haven't made any mistakes.
Well, here's my concern. We know Mr. Fields, who brought this issue to us, is aware, would be aware of this thing and would go apply for the retroactive payment. Other people who may not be aware, who somehow start digging through the ORS or find themselves in a circumstance and then have their tax accountant or their tax preparer digging through the ORS and uncover this, then would go in and apply for something. Is there any point at which these kind of windows close, or are they open forever?
This one closes. They must file a claim for interest refund on or before April 15th, 1988. Okay. So next year at tax time, they have to file. Remember, this is only the interest for that four-month period. The department is paying interest from after the four-month period, and it would be the first 4 months of interest that it would be repaid.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Jones.
Is it acceptable to ask the department the amounts of money we're discussing?
Yes, it's acceptable. Mr. Humphrey, do you have any estimate, or Rick?
Somebody?
Yes, I'm it looks like it's about $600 growing each day. Mr. Fields sent me a copy of his, I'm assuming since he sent me a copy of this thing and has been sending it, well actually he's been sending it all around, that it's okay for people to talk about his taxes. Not sure the department can, but since he sent it to us and we're public here, that it's around $600.
Mr. Chairman.
In his case. Representative McCarty.
All we're doing here is codifying what they should have been doing in the first place. Now, I agree with the fellow, and I would like to move the Dash 11 amendments. I think it's no more than right and fair that we move them.
Okay, Representative McCarty moves the Dash 11 amendments, I think, which are the retroactive ones.
That's right.
Is that the ones you want, Representative McCarty?
Representative Traeger? Rick just said that it was $600 growing each day. I would assume that over the 4-month period of time, how would it be growing?
Well, the
interest on interest.
The taxpayer is claiming that the department should have paid him the 4 months, the interest for the first 4 months. So what the taxpayer is taking the position that when the department paid him money, the department always has made a refund on this. That what the department did was first pay him the interest he was due, and then the rest of it applied against the principal as a tax. This is the same thing the department does when it receives a payment from someone. Okay? So what the taxpayer is saying is that I received my interest, and then I received part of my tax refund, but still there's some tax refund outstanding. Okay? Now, actually, so what he's claiming is, and so in his from his viewpoint, is growing each day because he has some tax that is outstanding. Okay, I'm not sure what the tax court would say about that. This, let's see, not quite sure how this would work. This would say that he gets the 4 months worth of interest, and I guess would the department pay interest on this underpayment of interest? I see somebody shaking their head. I'm not sure it would be very much. It would be $0.27 a day, according to Mr. Fields in his petition. It's how much it's growing.
That's Representative Traeger?
I guess, Mr. Chair, if you adopt his philosophy, that's really principle that they've not yet paid. Then that's where the interest would come on the quote principle that rather because he's making the assumption they paid all the interest.
That's right.
And Mr. Chair, would you accept the substitute motion to substitute Dash 12? Or do you want to?
Well, why don't we just if 11 goes down, we'll substitute 12. How's that? The issue between 11 and 12 is simply retroactivity. Is that correct?
Would that be the intent of your motion, Representative?
Yes. So let's see if there's sentiment to do it.
Well, say it loud. Okay.
The maybe to make one comment, I guess, on in a sense on behalf of Mr. Fields, and I think he would have wanted to make this comment, is that he has some concern that his court case might be jeopardized if you fail to adopt the retroactive part. If there's some implication that you are agreeing that the department has been interpreting this in the correct way all along, and that this is a change in policy.
I don't think that that's the way we usually treat the impact of legislation on pending court cases. I think we usually try to treat it that the legislature is not making a judgment on the validity of a person's claim, but we would be saying win or lose in court that the legislature has given them retroactive relief. So I'd hope it's not clear on the record that this piece of legislation is not intended to make any judgment or to affect in any way the validity of a claim that's being made in the tax court. Representative Jones?
Let me ask a question. Did this gentleman go to the Senate for this same request?
No, this he contacted his legislator, his House representative, and their staff contacted us.
Okay, that's all I want to know. Yeah.
He went through Representative Bond's office, and so it came. And this bill was already over here.
Representative Clory?
I don't know if this is an answerable question, but is there a reason to make it retroactive other than kind of sentiment for an individual petitioner, so to speak?
No.
Oh,
right. Representative McCarty?
You betcha there's a reason. That's what you call right and wrong.
Oh. That's the part I'm appreciating.
They should have been paying it in the first place. And I agreed with the fellow. That's the whole reason why we've got this retroactive amendment coming up.
Mr. Chair, how long have we been doing this? How long back should we make it, then, if that's the case?
It says 83, isn't it?
Go back to 83 so that it covers
the appeal.
Yeah, but my point is, if they've been doing it all along, how far back would we have to go to make it, quote, fair?
I am not sure when.
When was the Department of Revenue created?
Well, that might be an interesting consideration here.
I was that reading. Okay. We don't really have a procedure for that, but we'll go to a vote on the dash 11 amendments, unless there's an objection to voting. Denise, would you call a roll on the dash 11 amendments?
Representative Hanlon?